Soy goes. Who's the most fun to drink with of the Republican lawmakers? Todd Alba did decide to text us who's fun to get a drink with in the GOP.
Fantastic.
Todd also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the 12 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. We got Jane Madnair on the board. And two great guests this hour coming up at 12:30, Sherry Tussler, the executive director of Hunger Task Force, is going to join us to talk about the ending of the extra food share benefits and how that is going to impact the families who have been receiving them at basically the worst possible time and what food banks are going to try to do to meet the demand, but inevitably may fall short just because it's a lot of people who need a lot of help. But first, our guest for this hour, this first half hour, I read this over the weekend. I think this dropped, or maybe it was last week. So ALEC, which I'll let her tell us more about what ALEC is, but it is a conservative policy think tank, and they have a annual conference. And out of the people that work in the Wisconsin Assembly, the last two people I thought would ever go to this thing would be Representative Francesca Hong from Madison and our guest this half hour, Representative Christina Shelton from Green Bay. And yet you two went and then you wrote about it. So I cannot wait to hear what it was like and what you learned and what we should know. Welcome back to the show, Christina Shelton.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about with you all today.
So let's start. Just for people who are unfamiliar, what is ALEC?
So ALEC is the American Legislative Exchange Council. They are a national nonprofit. They consider themselves nonpartisan. And, you know, they might seem pretty innocuous, right? I mean, you think about nonpartisan, nonprofits, organizations. But really, they are one of the leading organizations around the country that's manufacturing these fake social wedge issues to distract voters, to really have us question our reality and sort of feel disconnected from one another. And essentially, one of the big things that they do is they draft legislation and then shop it around to legislators and legislatures around the country, and have been the authors of significant bills that you might have heard of, from stopping Medicaid expansion to stand your ground laws. They're creating this model legislation based on the interests of what I would argue corporations and special interest groups over constituents.
And I think people don't understand how prevalent that model legislation, and that is the coined term, model legislation, and that the reason why we see these bills that look almost identical popping up from state to state to state is it's basically the same bill that's been written by an outside entity, namely Ken B. ALEC. There's other entities that do this as well. And then they just modify things here and there for the state, to be specific. They get a state lawmaker to sponsor it. And this is why we see these things pop up that look almost identical. It's not coming from like the problems being identified and solved to that state uniquely. It's because they're like, hey, we've identified this as a problem. Please push this. So
yeah, and that's why I think it's really important to say these are manufactured issues that they are creating legislation to fix, right? It's almost as if they're, you know, lighting their neighbor's house on fire and then showing up as the fire department to put out a fire that they themselves have created and sort of, you know, and so it creates this sort of narrative around, you know, wokeism, what it means to be a conservative, what it means to be a Democrat, a Republican. And they've really dramatically and dangerously shifted American politics over the last few decades. So they're an incredibly influential organization that people need to be more aware of and how they're shaping their your state laws.
We are talking to Representative Christina Shelton, who attended a conference over the weekend. I just have to snort, Christina, when Alec claims to be bipartisan. Have they ever produced any legislation that is progressive in any sense at all?
Not to my knowledge, but, you know, I can't imagine how that would be possible. I mean, when we were at the conference, and I want to be clear here that we are allowed to be members of ALEC. I mean, they are a nonprofit. There is no, anybody can join. We paid our dues and we are members, and they can't turn us away from participating in these task forces that they have or from the conferences. You know, they do have to put out this sort of public facing nonpartisan nonprofit status, but it is entirely right wing and uber conservative.
So this was back in December, actually, of when the conference was. So it was the 2022 State and Nation Policy Summit, which is ALEC's annual conference. And so whose idea was it to go? You or Francesca's?
So, you know, Francesca actually has been a member of ALEC for a couple years.
Oh, wow.
Prior to me being a member. Representative Greta Neubauer was a member. And then when she stepped in to be our minority leader in the assembly, we were looking for another person to step in. And maybe I'm a glutton for punishment, but, you know, I really like to think about what is coming from, you know, I'm a Democrat. I like to think about what's coming from the Republican side so that it can help me to understand what's happening in our political world. And so we decided to go to this conference in D.C. And this is an annual conference where legislators from around the country, from all 50 states, come together with businesses and corporations and for-profit groups to come and talk about the issues that ALEC and these ultra right-wing conservative groups want to talk about, everything from, you know, school privatization, CRT, ESG, which I know we're going to talk about today. And they bring big speakers forward. I mean, folks like Mike Pence and Newt Gingrich, they were there at this conference speaking to attendees.
And so I want to get into what the meat of what the op-ed that you and Representative Hong wrote for Cap Times, which you can, we'll link in today's notes, but if you want to look it up, it's the Cap Times. Alec cooks up a sequel to critical race theory. And I want to get into the kind of what's next, but just to give us a little more of the tea as far as like, what was it like? Like, did you dress differently? Or like, how did you try to fit in? Did you try to just lay low? Or what was it like to actually witness something like this for the first time?
Yeah, you know, you feel like you're kind of walking into the lion's den, and we're the only Democrats there. And, you know, people sort of figure it out pretty quickly. I mean, the folks that run the conference know who we are. I mean, they're aware of us, but the other attendees don't, right? And so I remember saying to Francesca, you know, what do we wear to something like this? Do I dress differently? Do we try to fit in? Is it obvious? And I think I just wore, you know, I think I wore whatever I would be most comfortable in because I wanted to feel like myself. But it's sort of a surreal experience. I mean, in one of the first sessions that we were in, the main conference organizers kind of were aware that we were in the room, and we could see them talking about us in the corner and kind of whispering to one another. And I just looked over to them and waved like, hello, you know, I'm here. I know you know who I am. But what's crazy is the other attendees, I mean, they just assume you're a conservative right-wing Republican. And so you really can get a full immersive experience of what these folks are working really hard towards, and not only our states, but our country.
Did you see any of your other Republican Wisconsin lawmakers there?
Yes, I saw one or two, but most of the folks we did not know and were from around the rest of the country.
And so was it like workshops? Was it mostly going to different speakers, or what was kind of the event, like the agenda, and what did you guys end up going to and seeing?
Yeah, you know, it's a standard conference. There's booths with information and, you know, different groups that are selling information or selling materials or have materials to hand out. There's, you know, a morning workshop, and then there's these different sort of breakout sessions. And, you know, in terms of the ESG, what was so interesting, the first morning session we walked in and we're having, you know, coffee and we're eating some pastries and we're listening to this panel of, you know, folks talk about, you know, current key issues in politics. And the moment when one of the attendees, the presenter said, you know, ESG is the greatest threat to American democracy since the Civil War, I actually started choking on my croissant and I started laughing. And I'm like, is this happening? And so I turned to Fran and I said, did he just say ESG? Well, right when I said that, I looked around and every person at the conference pulled out their phone and you could see them Googling, you know, what is ESG? So, you know, again, it's a manufacturing of crises. And the folks that go there are looking for someone to tell them what they should be worried about and how to go back and sell that to the people in their states. It was wild.
So I guess because I don't think we've defined it yet, what is ESG? I guess because there's two, there's what ESG has been and there, what is the ESG as they're defining it?
You know, ESG is a pretty standard practice that we're seeing in businesses and organizations around the country. And that's kind of what is really interesting, that what ALEC is able to do. And it's the same type of thing with CRT, right? They sort of take this complex niche topic and they shift things around and they concoct new threads out of thin air to sort of use that complex idea to sort of drive their narrative that, you know, we should be very afraid of wokeism, leftist policies, and sort of, you know, what policies that are good for working people and also, quite frankly, for business. And so, you know, ESG is something that stands for environmental, social, and governance. It's a set of investing policies that companies take into consideration when they're looking at investments, potentially screening, you know, how their company addresses climate emergencies or how their company might consider diversity, equity, and inclusion in its leadership. So these are not things that I think most people would listen to and say, oh my gosh, this is a real threat to American democracy. But ALEC concocts that narrative for the people.
And so when we come back, Representative Christina Shelton will still be here talking about her experience at the ALEC conference and what spin they are trying to put on ESG, and then also recommendations on what and how Democrats can combat this if this is kind of the new CRT. So stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be right back. The race.
Got the whole town on the take. They're in his pocket, they're on his side. Everybody gets a piece of the pie. Follow the money. 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 If it looks too good. Follow the money. Well, I've been trying.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Fine state, where would you reside? Not quite to Canada, Great Lakes are by her side. Home of Aldo Leopold, Big Sky and Orson Welles. Steve Miller Band, lots of used up shotgun shells. Where everyone's your neighbor, beer, cheese and fish fried. And you don't just say you're leaving, you say goodbye 15 times.
Okay, bye-bye now. See you guys later. Hey, keep her moving.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. J. Matt Nair is on the board, and we are talking to Representative Christina Shelton from District 30 about her and Representative Francesca Hong's experience going to the 2022 State and Nation Policy Summit hosted by ALEC. And previously, we were talking about what it was like to be there, but what you two really heard, as and probably a good thing that you were there, is the next phase of manufactured outrage and concern is going to be over what it has been the last couple of years, CRT. And I think there's an argument to say it was also trans kids, basically, is now going to move into like what I understand to be an investment terminology as far as like guidelines for how companies work, but is now going to be weaponized as far as what we need to protect people from. Is that basically what you heard?
Yeah, I think that's right. That's right, Kristen. And, you know, your description, again, it seems pretty, you know, basic that these are strategies that companies and banking institutions are using to really weigh unethical or risky behavior or decisions that they may take in business that could help them become better investors and have better business models. So, yeah, that's a good description.
So what is the... I guess, for lack of a better word or a more fair word, what is the spin they're putting on it to sell it as something that is scary and bad?
Well, you know, it's really interesting, and I just have to read this quote to you because the partner organizations like the Heritage Foundation, which is an ultra-right-wing organization that I get their weekly emails from. So all these groups, right, are manufacturing these issues, these crises. And they're really doubling down on this whole idea that ESG is, and they actually said in a recent email, ESG is a movement that is it's a dangerous attempt to undermine our market and force a woke agenda on all of us. So really what they're saying here is that this is a woke agenda. And then now they're starting to connect it to working people, and maybe where their investments are, whether it's, you know, retirement funds or other investments, and saying, you know, if you are investing in these banks that use an ESG model as part of their corporate practice, that you are inherently then investing in wokeism and woke politics and in the left. So again, they're sort of trying to connect the dots, similar to what they did with CRT, right? Which was to take something that had some level of being real and actual, that, you know, people are working on diversity, equity, inclusion to make our society better, and then weaponizing that to drive people apart from one another. So their motives are really only to lean into their donors and corporate class and millionaires and billionaires, and can you continue to divide working people is my take on it, if I'm being incredibly blunt.
Yeah, no. And because it is the same thing you write about, you and Fran wrote about this in the article, is just CRT was something that came out of nowhere. It was something that was like only used in academia, not even academia, like in undergrad.
It was law school.
Right.
And the conflation of inclusivity to CRT, and that was completely, and now it's common, like conventional wisdom, to just throw that out, even though so many people really still can't explain it. And I think in using these dumbed down terms like wokeism, someone just tweeted that this morning. I saw it. It's like, do you think Ron DeSantis would feel confident in running for president if he was not allowed to use the word woke? Yeah. And like, just rely on it.
He's really the poster boy for ALEC right now. And in fact, when we put this article out that day, he announced potential legislation or action at the state level in Florida to go after banks and corporations using ESG. And I actually laughed out loud when I saw his announcement, because everything we said they were going to say and do was exactly what Ron DeSantis said and did. And it was like, hello, we know what's happening. And so to your point around, you know, CRT, my goal in going to these conferences is really to not be caught on our heels like we were with CRT, right? Is to say, hey, this is going to be the next thing. And they're not going to stop anytime soon trying to use these to really exploit people's real and honest and critical economic anxieties. I mean, people are in incredibly painful positions in terms of economic security. And so they're going to continue to exploit that. And so telling my colleagues and folks like you, and listen, ESG is going to be the next thing. Let's not sort of laugh it off and kind of push it away like we did with CRT for too long, because they're doubling and tripling down on making this the next issue.
Representative Shelton, is ALEC membership only open to politicians? Are people in the private sector allowed? Because I really want to go to their next conference. I think it would be so much fun.
Yeah, you can actually have a public membership. I was doing some digging this morning. They estimate that their membership is around 2,000 folks. I don't know if that's real or not, but you do not, in my understanding, have to be a lawmaker. So please sign up, because the next conference is in July. It's in Orlando, and you bet your bottom dollar I will be there.
Oh, Civic needs to send us.
Do you want to go?
You bet I do.
Should we bring our camera? Should we do some woman on the street interviews?
There's the potentials. There's so many possibilities.
Well, any parting thoughts or call to actions as far as your takeaways from this event or, you know, future legislation that could be coming down the pipe?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing here is just, you know, as Democrats and as progressives and as people who really believe that we need to create a Wisconsin and a country that works for the majority, not just the few, right? We need to have a clear goal of how we're going to push back on these sort of manufactured crises. And what I tell people all the time is, like, let's not respond with arguments about the merits of free-based marketing or banking and ESG, right? That sort of has we then end up having the conversation on the terms of that ALEC has set forward. Yeah. And what I'm basically saying to my colleagues is, what we need to do is double down on making America more American, right? Yeah. Making the country in Wisconsin more prosperous for
Christina,
working families.
Unfortunately, I got to cut you off, but thank you so much for sharing your experience. We will link that article, their op-ed. It was excellent. Thank you for joining us, Christina. We got to take a break. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Hey, brother. Do you still believe in love, I wonder?
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm your host, Kristen Bry. Jane Matinair is on the board, and we are happy to take any of your feedback on any of our topics. You can always give us a call or a text at the same number, 844-967-2789. And next Wednesday is going to be a hard day for a lot of Wisconsinites, because next Wednesday, March 1st, hundreds of thousands of low-income Wisconsinites are going to see a drop in their food assistance payments, leaving food banks bracing for a huge increase in demand, because while the pandemic itself has slowed, it doesn't mean that inflation and the cost of living is not extremely high for all of us, but it's incredibly so for low-income people who have been relying on the extra benefits that were extended through the food share program, and that is coming to an end next week. And so here to talk to us more about that issue and kind of the current environment of food insecurity, at least in Southeast Wisconsin, is Sherry Tussler, who has been the executive director of the Hunger Task Force since 1997. And so we're so excited to have you here, Sherry.
I'm glad to be here.
So I guess just to cover some basics. So for us in Wisconsin, food share is SNAP, right?
Exactly.
But that is also different than the WIC Women and Infants. I'm forgetting what the last.
We call it WIC.
WIC. Yes. So WIC, and that is also something different. This doesn't affect WIC. This is just what we call food share. I mean, this is what we called SNAP.
SNAP.
And so did I summarize that correctly as far as what has been happening and what is going to happen next week?
Yeah. People have been getting emergency allotments on and off since April when the pandemic first hit back in 2020. A lot of people are used to getting them, but also have built them into their budget. And there are a lot of people who were not getting food share before the pandemic who became unemployed due to the pandemic. And so they don't know what the base benefits are or would have been prior to the pandemic. It's especially going to harm a lot of seniors and people with disabilities. But to put it lightly, it's going to be a big disaster. It's going to be very challenging for a lot of people, because we are going to lose altogether in Wisconsin economy $1 billion in federal aid.
Wow. And so from at least the way that it reads in the articles I read about this, this was voted on in December in Congress to end in March. And what was the rationale, knowing that, I mean, so many of these people ran on inflation and the cost of living and how expensive everything was. And so, and this was obviously with the last Congress, it wasn't even the new Republican held House. And so what was the justification for ending this?
Well, really, none's been offered. But we do know that we had to have both a combined federal and state public health emergency. Wisconsin has had an administrative public health emergency for coming up on 2 years, which means that we weren't withdrawing our public health emergency, but the federal government had promised us all that when they withdrew theirs, then and only then would this retraction of benefits occur. And they haven't pulled it away, but instead they sort of, in the 12th hour, literally December 29th, passed it without mentioning any reason or justification, frankly. They used, I think, a whopping total of 8 words in a 400 or 4,000 page document. So it's just part of the omnibus spending bill. No states will receive emergency allotments after March 1st.
Wow. And so with, in the time that the emergency allotments were there, did you see, as far as for at least for speaking for a hunger task force, a big drop off of the people who needed your guys' services, as far as people who could kind of use that money and make it stretch? Or was it still, I mean, did, I guess what difference did you see it making anecdotally in for hunger task force?
It decreased hunger by 50%.
Wow.
And so we know it works. And we said forever, SNAP works, food share works. This is a program that works because it provides direct assistance to people in the form of a debit card that they get funding on one time per month that they can go to the grocery store. They can pick the foods that they like, the foods that they want, the foods that are culturally appropriate for them or that are healthy for them. And all of those things affect what people will choose to eat. And they don't have to visit a food pantry. Begging for food is not the way it should be, especially in an agricultural state, yeah, but especially in the United States. And so this dependency on charity and even the message from certain charities that this is a good thing, that people are reliant on us and, oh, we can get them all the food that they need. I'm just going to say not true, not real, and not a good idea.
We're talking to the executive director of the Hunger Task Force. Sherry Tussler is our guest, and we're talking about some food benefits, important food benefits that are going to be ending next week on March 1st. Sherry, I've seen some stories in particular about senior citizens, and I'm wondering if you can be a little more specific about what they had under this program and what they were able to spend on their food budget and what that's going to be cut to after next Wednesday.
Seniors living in public housing, anybody in subsidized housing, was getting $283 a month in food share, and they will return to $23 per month.
From $200 to $23.
$283 to $23.
How?
That's your mom. That's your grandma.
Yeah. And I just,
as a person living with disabilities, as a person that's dependent on Social Security income to make all of their ends meet, they are the ones that are impacted the most. And so we want them to know that that is the case. We want them to open their mail and read their mail and understand what's going on. And if at all possible, collect up every single bill they own, call the state of Wisconsin and report all of their expenses. Because if they do that, their food share benefits may increase, could increase to a whopping $90.
For a month.
Yeah.
With prices being as they are. And so what, because I think this is sometimes people don't have a full, can't really visualize all the different types of people who benefit from food share. And so we said people, elderly, disability, but like what are the kind of different demographics that people who are going to be affected by this fall under?
Working people.
Yep.
Everybody wants to say, oh, that's just like some lazy bum, some guy standing on the corner, somebody who's houseless. No, not true. More than 43% of the people receiving food share have a person in their household working for a living. It's just that their wages are so low, they still qualify for the benefits. It's also true of things like Badger Care, health insurance. And so let's remember the working poor in this process. Let's remember that we're now taking food away from people who work for a living and still need assistance because they have dependent children or others in their family that are relying on them.
So as we, this has been federal dollars.
100%.
As we talk about potential solutions locally or at the state level, has there been any discussion? I think I know the answer to this, but has there been any discussion on what we can do policy-wise in Wisconsin to make up for what's going to happen?
Well, I think we got to first put it in context and understand that it's 100% federal funding. And so the $61 million or so dollars that were coming to our state in emergency allotments that are ending are being withdrawn, and that's federal money. But the state isn't planning to replace those dollars with anything. If you were to look at the scale of the food share or SNAP program nationally, you would see that it is 74% of all the USDA spending on food, where the commodity programs that help us operate a food bank that serves food pantries are 1%. So our state's Department of Health Services is now directing people to reach out to their local food pantry to replace 74% with 1%. It just doesn't, the math doesn't work.
Math doesn't work.
And so we're saying to the state, do the math, and you can't refer people to those food pantries and expect that charity is going to replace the foods that are going to be missing from the table when the food share or SNAP disappears. People are going to be in big trouble, and food pantries and food banks across the state of Wisconsin are going to be in big trouble.
And so, because I think that was the quote I saw that you had in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, is that this by summer could be in the 25 years you've been working in this, in food insecurity and hunger task force, by this summer could be the worst crisis you've seen as far as food insecurity goes?
Absolutely. The last time we had a crisis this large was my first year at work, and we were reforming welfare. And we erroneously cut people off of their food share, which is effectively what we're doing right now. And we increased homelessness and hunger in ways that I can't even describe. That was the Thompson administration, and it was called W-2, Wisconsin Works. So we had all these work requirements, and we threw out the food stamp application because we told people that only work pays. And effectively, that's what we're doing right now, because we're going to be taking away the base benefits that people need to put food on the table in order to put clothes on their kids' backs, in order to meet tuition costs, in order to pay for medicine or utilities, or just buy food, because the inflation issue that you addressed earlier, it can't be underscored strongly enough.
And so I'm sure as in your career of this, but there's been so many social science studies done that have proven that SNAP, food share, the long-lasting impact it has specifically on kids, and the ways that this, and if you can feed kids, the other societal ills that this can have impacts on, whether it's violence, whether it's health outcomes, like so many other things that we end up paying for as a society in other ways, can be alleviated through just letting people afford food. Is that kind of the same mentality that you've are, or like the same in the street, or like on in the field, being able to see how much this impacts people's long-term life and their health outcomes by just making sure that they don't go hungry?
Absolutely. I was at a White House meeting last week, and the president's chief of staff talked about the scarring effects of long-term poverty and what it does to our memories, to our feelings about our worth and our wellness in the community. And I think that is a great way to describe what it means to go without food on a chronic basis, to choose between you eating and your kids eating, to decide to become a vegetarian because you can't afford meat, to buy the cheapest possible foods and have them impact your health in ways that give you diabetes or heart disease. So think about that scarring impact that this poverty is going to be implying on Wisconsinites.
She is the executive director of the Hunger Task Force. Sherry Tesler is our guest. Sherry, I saw something over the weekend that just pointed out we depend so much on philanthropy to fill these gaps instead of putting the onus on employers to pay their employees a living wage so philanthropy doesn't have to step in.
It's an awesome point, because if everybody made a living wage, then everybody could go to the grocery store and buy their own food, and they wouldn't have to worry about signing up for government programs or looking for state-sponsored health care. They could be as free as most normal people in the community to live a healthy lifestyle and to not be dependent any longer.
And that opens a whole other thing as far as philanthropy and the people who have money being able to decide what gets funded and what doesn't. And I personally have a problem with that. And so when we come back from break, Sherry Tesler will still be here and we can talk about what you can do as far as if this has raised the alarm for you as far as trying to help, whether it's with food banks or calling your legislatures. So when we come back, Sherry Tesler will still be here. If you have any questions, if you want to text in, we already have one question on the live stream that we'll read when we come back. But if you would like to ask Sherry any questions, 844-967-2789, text them in. Jane will read them off. We will be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are joined this half hour by Executive Director of Hunger Task Force, Sherry Tesler, and we are talking about the very scary situation that is going to happen starting March 1st, that the extra food share benefits that hundreds of thousands of Wisconsin families were reliant on come to an end next week. And what a strain that is going to put on the food banks to be able to try to meet the demand that that is going to create. And Sherry, we had one question from the live stream from Jim. Will this federal defunding mean more kids depend on our public schools to get breakfast and lunch?
That is one solution that we're recommending for a lot of parents, that they should make sure that they've completed their free and reduced price meal application. Wisconsin also ranks dead last in participation in school breakfast and school lunch. And so we're encouraging parents to make sure that their kids get to school early so that they can have school breakfast at school. That if their parents are radicals, as they should be, about their kids' education, that they figure out a way to get school in the class or breakfast in the classroom. Or breakfast after the bell if they have junior or senior high school kids. Lunch participation is around 50%, and sometimes it has to do with the quality of the food. And so it's okay as parents to raise a little bit of hell with the local food or school system, the lunch ladies, to make sure that the food is of higher quality so that the kids want to eat it.
And so that's also, I know that as part of at least the budget proposal from Governor Evers was providing more funding for breakfast and lunch in schools, probably partially because of this. But as far as any of us as individuals who are hearing about this, what can we do?
Well, I think earlier when I came on, you guys mentioned that a lot of money was going to go to the Milwaukee Brewers in order to stay here in Milwaukee. What you could say is that the governor also budgeted $20 million for a food security initiative that he is going to have hopefully be in on the regular. And so calling and saying that's a great idea, but maybe thinking about the value of what he's budgeting versus the amount of SNAP that's being lost to the community, it's going to be really difficult to replace. And there are states that actually do directly fund programs, and Hunger Task Force has been working on something called the Badger Box. And the Badger Box is 100% Wisconsin foods that we box and we send to communities across the state. And we buy the food from small and medium-sized farmers. So we help farmers and food producers from our own state, and we feed our families. And a program like that could be funded. And so if anybody's got nothing better to do or wants to pitch in and help out, call the governor's office and say, we need more money for the Badger Box.
She is the executive director of the Hunger Task Force, Sherry Tussler, our guest this afternoon on As Goes Wisconsin. Sherry, texter from the 608 asks, can the governor use state COVID money to make up the difference on SNAP benefits, at least in the short term through June for the budget talks?
He can. And that's actually being done out east. I don't know how sustainable it could be, but it could at least get us through this process of that is COVID and extend those benefits until we figure out how to step people down and get through this inflationary period.
Because that is, it sounds like, I always think about this as, with voting and trying to get information out to people where it's just, they're not on their phones all day. They're not necessarily always, they're transitory. So like their mail and stuff like that, of trying to reach people to get the information that they need. I obviously think of that more in the voting lens, but as you were saying in the last segment, of how many people do you work with, or how many people do you think this is going to affect that don't even know that it's coming?
A lot of people don't open their mail from the state. It's always bad news, and so it's hard to look at it. It's like a bill that you can't pay. And so we know right now that 703,888 Wisconsinites are going to lose, on average, $206 per person. Most of those people are concentrated in Milwaukee County at 241,943 people, so about a quarter of the total. But these are people who are living in rural and remote spaces. These are people who are living on tribal reservations. These are people who have to go large distances to get access to food. And we all think about inflation when we live in urban areas, but imagine what it's like to drive more than 20 miles just to get to a Quick Trip or a Walmart and be dependent on the foods from those places in order to live. And when food prices are literally double what they are from Milwaukee to above Highway 8, what that means for people living in the northern or up north parts of our state.
So beyond, as far as going back to what we can do, legislation, call the governor's office, potentially call state representatives and your congressman. But as far as food, if you keep in mind a food that to donate, is that still something that we should be thinking top of mind, like your local food bank, and provide, like trying to up donations to them?
Yeah, and I ask people to be thoughtful about who they donate to. Make sure that the group that you donate to passes on 100% of your donated goods absolutely free of charge. Hunger Task Force is a free and local food bank here in Milwaukee, and there are free groups across the state of Wisconsin that are not member organizations of the national organization called Feeding America. That group charges for food, and we don't want to be donating food and having a little bit of an uptick taken off in the top of it. So find your local food pantry, donate generously, and give them healthy foods. Give them foods that people really would look forward to receiving.
And that's what was going to be my question is, is there limitations as far as perishable or non-perishable, cans, pastas? Like what is, when you say healthy food, like what are some of the best examples as far as like the good stuff to be donating?
Peanut butter, fruit juice, or fruit in a can that isn't in syrup, low-sodium vegetables, whole grain foods, frozen meats are great. People will take that stuff, and we were able to build infrastructure through both CARES and ARPA to make sure that a lot of pantries in small towns have coolers and freezers now. So give them a call and give them the thing that they need, because it could be that the thing that they need is infant formula.
Yeah.
So let's be thoughtful. Let's treat everybody as if they're our best friend and give them something that we would want.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sherry. This is a really tough, sobering pill to know that is hasn't even happened yet. And it's something that you are going to be at the forefront of trying to help people with come next week. But open door to come back and keep us updated on things that people can be doing, the status of some of these other government programs that could help this. But thank you so much for the work you do and for joining us today.
It's nice to be on board, and I really appreciate you giving us the time.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that will do it. This was a quick hour as far as between our two guests, but we will wrap up our noon hour. And when we come back, we actually still have a fun guest next hour. We're going to do the No sour, haha, superpower, funny hour, whatever we're calling it. Enlighten things up. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I know what you're thinking. You're a loner. No love of your own. But darling,
reach out.
Come on, girl. Reach out for me.
Reach out.
Just look over your shoulder.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.